So you mentioned Hot Tuna. Who else comes to mind that visited the station?
Gosh, we had so many really cool people come up. One of my favorites was when Joe Elliott, the lead singer for Def Leppard, came up. It was, their, I think, their first tour through America with the, I guess it was the Pyromania album.
That was the big one.
Yeah, the Hysteria album was after that, yeah. Right?
And High and Dry was the first one.
Okay, this must have been the tour that supported the release of Pyromania. So they were big. And he came up and was so casual about his time. Number one, they had to drive all the way to Mayflower to get to the studio, which was great because once they were there, they thought, well, gosh, it took me a half hour to get here. I'm not going to just spend 10 minutes and then go back. But Joe was so relaxed, and he told us in the interview that he'd been a DJ back in England. I think it was England. I don't think he's Irish. I think he's English. And we said, well, you want to take over? And he was like, are you kidding? I'd love to do that. So we just said on the air, okay, for the next hour, it's the Joe Elliott Show on Magic 105. Call in what you want to do. Call in which one. Number one, people were freaking out they could call and talk to a rock star. Number two, he was freaking out that he could play what they were asking for. And sure, it ended up being about maybe five Def Leppard songs and all the rest were other stuff. But he was fantastic. And I remember them coming through Little Rock again on the Hysteria tour and him remembering every moment of that hour. It was that special to him.
That's great.
Oh, gosh, there were lots. Mostly good experiences. Occasionally you'd get the very rude rock star, you know, who just didn't have time for this. I don't know what it was that they would rather be doing, but you could tell right away that this was the last place in the world that they wanted to be. But the record company representative had said, this is what you're doing this afternoon, so let's go.
Yeah.
And they were there.
This was well before your time in radio, I think. But you told me the story back when I was in high school of Led Zeppelin before Stairway to Heaven was released. You're seeing them in concert. Tell me the story.
The big concerts when I was in high school, I was still living in the Chicago area in Addison, Illinois. That's where I went to high school. And I spent all my money on albums and concert tickets. That was our whole life. And the big concerts were always downtown. And the biggest acts would play the Chicago International Amphitheater. Medium-sized acts would play the Airy Crown Theater. Smaller acts would play at places downtown, like the Kinetic Playground. How's that for a great name for a rock club, the Kinetic Playground, or the Aragon Ballroom? And so that's where we would go see shows. Led Zeppelin had already had their first three albums out. They were a worldwide phenomenon. And when we found out that Led Zeppelin was coming, absolutely, we went and bought tickets. You used to stand in line. You know, that morning you'd go and literally buy a paper ticket, hand over the money. And so we went anyway. And about midway through the show, Robert Plant and Jimmy Page came out to the front of the stage and put a couple of stools there. And Jimmy Page had an acoustic guitar. And he said that we're going to play a song that's going to be on our next album. And it's called Stairway to Heaven. And nobody had heard it. Nobody knew what this was. And they started off with that beautiful acoustic guitar and Robert Plant's voice. And as they get into the more electric part, the rest of the band starts coming out. And there's John Paul Jones at the keyboard. And there's John Bonham behind the drum set. And Jimmy Page has some guitar tech come out and switch his acoustic guitar right in the middle of the song, takes the acoustic guitar off, puts the electric guitar on. And at the end of this 10-minute explosion of rock, you were just, I don't know what I just heard, but this is unbelievable. And then, of course, it wasn't very long after that the album came out, and there it was. Mm. Stairway to Heaven.
Yeah. What do you think about the music progression? You saw changes in music over the years. At that time, obviously, it was a much more conceptual era for big rock and progressive rock. And then you mentioned punk and then what it kind of evolved into in the 80s. But you programming that, what did you think, just the music?
I think the one thing that stands out from a radio and personal, I've always been a music fan. I don't play any music. I don't play any musical instruments or anything. But I've always been a music fan. And am attracted to new trends. And MTV, just like you said, you were just attracted to it and couldn't believe how cool it was. I was the same way, even though I was, 1980, 81. Mm. So I was 27 years old when it came out. And I was just, I couldn't take my eyes off of it. But I think the one thing that, the one mistake we made at Magic 105, and it was all my doing musically, was that I embraced all that new wave music too quickly at the expense of what you could categorize as basically blues-based guitar rock. Rolling Stones, Led Zeppelin, The Who, bands like that. We never let the new wave completely take over, but once it was as big as it was, even with, it didn't have to be superstar bands either, and I think that's where I maybe made my mistake. The Pretenders were a superstar band, and we were all about that first couple of albums. But do you remember bands like ABC?
Yeah. And that was much more pop.
It was, and I loved it. I still love the way that music sounds, and we began to integrate that music into the playlist more and more and more. And I think we reached a tipping point where, had we not realized it through being attentive to listener input, it could easily have toppled our the big spot we had on the radio dial. We were still far and away the number one rock station in the area. And had I not listened to the listener input, you know, I want to hear the Eagles. Uh-huh. I want to hear, you know, bands like that instead of all of this stuff. I think I could have made a fatal mistake and toppled the radio station just a little bit. But thank goodness for opinionated listeners and broadcasters who listen to what their listeners are telling them, because I realized I've gone too far. I think I need to pull this back.
Well, it was in that era, it was just a rock station. Now you've got the classic rock and you've got the active rock and whatever is kind of the alternative-esque, whatever the formal name for that is. But you now have multiple genres, whereas in that era, it was just, you're a rock station.
That's exactly right. I remember, you know, nowadays, working in a building which, excuse me, has a CHR station, Hot 94.9, it's very much a hip-hop generation-based playlist, and that is still called CHR. That's still the title, which stands for Contemporary Hit Radio. We used to call it Top 40, but now it's been, for decades, it's been CHR. I look back to my CHR / Top 40 upbringing around the Chicago area, listening to WLS, WCFL, all those radio stations, and even WIRL in Peoria when we moved there. And it was, as you said, about, you were a rock station in 1980. You played all that was rock. That's what Top 40 was, too. If the Urban Cowboy soundtrack was out and Looking for Love by Johnny Lee was a hit, your Top 40 station, you're playing that. And you're also playing the, you know, the rock product from other states. And it all coexisted on the same radio station. And I think that influenced the way Magic 105 was. We played it all. We played all those different genres of rock. And it was an art to get them together. I've always been a big fan of the well-constructed segue in music radio. There's a exact right point at the end of every song, whether it fades out or whether it has a cold ending, there's an exact right moment where you should hit the next song. And when I hear somebody do that on the air, I love it. It still gives me a tingle, you know, of that is just perfection right there, whether they're talking over it or if it's just a music-to-music segue.
Yeah, just maybe a computer putting it together. Used to be a much more thought out.
Yes.
DJ waiting to hit the button and maybe knowing how much of a pause is on the cart or whatever.
Right.
Or when they went to CDs, when you could, you know, listen to the cue and. But even LPs, I loved, you know, my early stations, you know, learning to cue up records and,
yes. I used to love playing cuts from live albums from an album and starting with the pot down and slowly building it up as if the audience was growing, right? And you knew how much audience sound you had before the beginning of the song. What used to be a real challenge was when the Moody Blues would come out with new albums back when they were a current rock act. Their albums, they made an artistic decision that they segued all the cuts themselves on the album.
Oh.
There was never any space in between the songs. If you pick up the vinyl edition of any early Moody Blues album, all the way through their career, as one song's fading, the other one begins.
Mm-hmm.
So you had to accentuate the fade on your own so that you could segue into another song, another artist. And that was always difficult, but a great challenge. And when you pulled it off the right way, oh man, what a satisfying little mini moment.
You mentioned KAAY. And by the way, it was great, the session you moderated a year ago at the Ron Robinson Theater on KAAY. That was just that was first station I ever fell in love with, even though I was like six. But that's when I decided that's where I wanted to go with my career.
Right.
And KQ94, they did, I think it was Tuesday nights at 9 o'clock, they did what they called, I think, the amateur hour, and they would let people come up. And I asked my dad, hey, can I do that? My dad actually called KQ94, said, hey, you know, my son, he's in second grade, but he wants to do it. They said they weren't comfortable having a second grader on the air. But they said that, well, if you want, though, you can bring him up to the station. So that afternoon, my dad said they're not going to let you do it, but they invited us up. So come on, let's go over to the station. So in second grade, I think this would have been 79, maybe 80. I went in there. It was still Cottondale Lane, where the Point and 103.7
right.
are. And it just was incredible. My biggest regret, the DJ kind of brought me into the conversation, turned on the mic in front of me, and I was too terrified to say a word.
But good on them for making that offer, and great on your dad for taking you up there.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how you grow broadcasters. That's how you cultivate that interest. The youngest person that I ever had an experience like that with, we were asked to donate something to an auction, and I don't remember what the community organization was, but they were having a silent auction. And the thing we decided to offer, because we thought it was kind of creative, was an hour-long show on Magic 105.
Hmm.
This is what you got to do. You could program your own music within limitations. And a family won it, and the lady called me the week after the weekend event, and she said, it's my sixth grade daughter that wants to do this. She loves the idea of a radio show. And I said, let's do it. And so she came up, and we had a couple of meetings beforehand. I was able to get her comfortable with talking on a mic. We did a couple of practice things. And then I said, now, we're not going to do this live because I think that'll be a little too intimidating. But we picked a Sunday afternoon, and she came up with her mom, and she had her playlist out and what she wanted to say and who she wanted to dedicate the songs to. I told her where the commercial breaks would be and where the weather forecast would be. And we actually produced an hour-long radio show for her that sounded great.
Wow.
And gave her a tape of it, and she hopefully still has it. And we aired it like on a Sunday evening at 6 p.m. And it was, I just felt so good about that. You know, every aspect of having donated a creative item, a family bought it, and it came to fruition just like they hoped it would. And I just always have felt really great about that.
Yeah. Well, KAAY and KQ94 went away. KAAY went to, I don't know if they went to Christian paid programming right away, but I think by the mid-80s or late 80s. But then I think it was 86 maybe, that 94.9 became KZ95 and
yes.
actually went after you guys very aggressively.
Very.
I think they even called themselves Arkansas's only rock and roll station.
Yeah, they were very aggressive. The company that owned them was into intimidation tactics. They were very good at it, too. I'll never forget. This was one of the most intimidating guerrilla tactics of hand-to-hand radio combat I've ever been a part of. we had some, we being Magic 105, had some kind of an event. Seems to me it was the finals of a Battle of the Bands or something like that. And there used to be a club right behind the town pump on Rebsamen, and it was called...
It wasn't the Wine Cellar.
It wasn't the Wine Cellar.
The round metal
building. Yeah, like a Quonset hut.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Okay, maybe it was the Wine Cellar. Anyway, we were having that big event. All of the DJs from Magic 105 were there, and we were in the middle of the evening. It was going great. It was a packed house. And suddenly, unannounced, the front doors to the place get swung wide open, and the entire staff of KZ95, the morning guys, the salespeople, the administration, all the DJs, came marching in like General Patton attacking the enemy, and just quietly and confidently handed T-shirts and merchandise to every single person that was there. And as they walk by us, they just give you that look like, I am in your face, and this is what you can expect, because we are not going to back down until we knock you off that pedestal that you've enjoyed for these past 5 or 6 years. And I remember thinking to myself, oh my gosh, this is... I'm scared.
I'm sure.
I am very, very scared that they are going to take our number one rating away from us, because these guys are not fooling around. And they walked all the way through the club, turned around and walked just as slowly out. and I just thought, oh my God, it took me weeks to get over that. Absolutely weeks. That was pure genius on the part of whoever came up with that idea.
But they only lasted, I think, 2 years.
Yeah.
And then became Cool 95, playing oldies.
Loved Cool 95.
And they marketed themselves about being all music off compact disc.
Yes, yes.
They didn't say CDs either. It was compact disc.
Right, using the full term. That's right. And they were and they had a terrific morning team. Bob Brown and Jeff, I can't remember Jeff's last name, but he eventually came to work for us and did a night show at Magic 105. But they were a very serious competitor. And I think the whole reason that they didn't have a bigger effect on us was that they just kind of self-destructed. I think there was a lot of inner turmoil. I think the impression that I got from the people who ran the radio station as being real trained in guerrilla warfare broadcasters. At this point in radio broadcasting, there was a company that operated a bunch of radio stations in Florida and some other big markets. I'm trying to remember the name of the company.
Paxson?
No, it wasn't Paxson. Hmm. Very aggressive in all of their market battles. Their most famous win was, I think, in a huge Florida market, and they had a top 40 station called the Power Pig, and Scott Shannon was a part of this group. J-Core.
Okay.
That was the name of the company. Very aggressive, and I think that's where I had read in the trade magazines about how aggressive and successful with these tactics J-Core was in these different markets. And I thought that's what KZ95 was. I thought this is exactly what they're doing, is just like these other ones. And it's going to work for them against me the same way it works for all these guys in Florida. And I can't remember the other markets where they're successful. I think they were in New York City. But it turned out they weren't that skilled at it. I don't mean to speak disparagingly, but it turns out they had a great initial burst of energy, and after that, I think business-wise, they kind of broke down, and they were never able to maintain that head of steam. But boy, they sure entered the market with one.
Yeah, but there's a sense of loyalty that people have to radio stations.
I like to think that's true. I think that's true. I've many times made a comparison between the way people choose their radio stations and the loyalty they feel to restaurants. Every time there's a brand new restaurant that comes into town, if you enjoy the experience of dining out, you're going to try it. You want to see what it's all about. But then you'll make your decision. Does that restaurant fall into my normal rotation of restaurants that my wife and I go to? Or was it just a one-time thing, a dalliance, and I'm back to my normal restaurants that I love? Radio the same way. If there's a brand new rock station and you're a rock fan, a rock listener, you're going to try it. You're going to listen to it. You may even spend a whole couple of months listening to it at the expense of your original radio station. But if you find it doesn't fill your needs, you know, satisfy your desires as a listener, hopefully you'll come back and that loyalty will stay intact.